Welcome to the Mama Bear Dares podcast. I'm Tessie.
And I'm Leslie.
We are sisters-in-law. Thank you so much for coming and listening to this podcast. Whether you're brand new or whether you've been here from the start, we just so appreciate you taking time out of your day to share it with us and to share it with our guests. Because on Mondays, we get to show you, just kind of prove that this world is full of remarkable women doing incredible things with their lives. Sometimes those incredible things are literally just picking up Legos after their toddler. Like, this is an incredible thing that we do all the time, right? And sometimes it's starting a business or a nonprofit. They can be big and they can be small, but they're doing it with so much joy, so much love, and so much compassion that we think you're going to see a little bit of you and each of our guests, and we also think they'll just inspire you to just keep living your life out loud the way they do as well. During today's episode, we introduce you to a mom that is just like you. Her name's Kendra Thompson. She's funny. She has two children. She's a writer and a pastor. And together, the three of us just focus the conversation on words like myth, habit, routine, ritual, vows, and discipline. So throughout the conversation, we play with these ideas and we try to understand how each of them fit into our lives and the ways we can benefit from these big sounding ideas, right? We enter this conversation from all sorts of angles, from the mothering standpoint, a spiritual or lack thereof sometimes standpoint, and from a partnership standpoint, focusing, I think, Leslie, you'll agree, marriage in particular is a big part of this conversation.
Yeah, I think you're right. And honestly, all of it added up together really ends up being, I think, a pretty rich conversation that kind of in some ways asks us to consider just the very like basic functions of our human brains and how we're wired and the way that we train ourselves and how this sort of impacts our day-to-day lives, which is really interesting. There's been a lot of research done on the power of habit and on the importance of routines for children. And I think that this topic that we discuss with Kendra today is really apt for our listeners. I think we all have so much on our minds as it is, but when we talk about forming habits, we actually are talking about forming ways to kind of get through our day with less stress and less deliberation. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about that this morning, actually, when I woke up, and I do the same basic routine every single morning. And I'm sure you all of our listeners have their own thing too. I go into the bathroom, I splash water on my face, I put my contacts in, and then I go downstairs. And the first thing I do, actually, before coffee is I grab a glass of cold water.
I do.
And I don't even think about these things. I just do it. And while I'm just doing it, I'm able to think about other things. So these habits really free space up in our brain to tackle larger topics.
It's true. It reminds me of this idea of really like meditation as you walk or meditation as you run. Mm-hmm. It is an active meditation that you're doing because you're able to keep moving and keep doing stuff, but allow your brain to stay focused on something else totally different than what you're currently doing, right? Because we have so much else to think about. I mean, I don't want to, especially in the morning. Are your mornings as crazy as mine are?
Probably.
Insane for school mornings, right? And I don't want to spend my brain space being overwhelmed with other things other than the crazy stuff that's happening. And so I love that. I'm the same way. I love jumping into my morning routine. And I don't really have to devote any extra time to thinking about making the coffee and doing that. These moments when I'm making the coffee and that's where I get my genius ideas. Like, these are the times when I'm doing another habit when it happens, right?
Yeah, I heard an interview recently on NPR. It was about this book called The Power of Habit, Why We Do What We Do in Life and Business. And it was really fascinating. Mm-hmm. It's by Charles Duhigg, I would say. Mm-hmm. and he writes that every habit starts with this psychological pattern. It's called a habit loop. And it's actually a three-part process. So first, there's this cue or this trigger that tells your brain to go into that automatic mode and just let the behavior unfold old. The routine is the actual behavior of that itself. And that's what we are thinking about when we talk about habits. And then finally, there's this reward. So, of course, we've been brushing our teeth, for instance, before we go to bed since we were toddlers. But this research that was done in 2009, I believe it was, says that it actually takes 66 days to form a new habit, which I thought was really interesting. So habits are something we end up doing automatically, but they take a while to form. And that explains, Tessie, I think, why I still haven't become a morning person. I would have to set my alarm and actually get up for around 66 days rather than the 3 that I've tried and failed.
3 in a row. Well, and I mean, I feel like you get in a really good rhythm during the weekday and then all hell breaks loose on the weekends. Yeah. And that's not, I think that's, they usually mean 66 days in a row, right?
Yes. Yep. In a row. And I mean, again, it kind of goes back to that really interesting brain science that's emerging.
Yeah.
This is the function of the human brain.
Yeah, exactly, which is one of the reasons that we wanted to talk to Kendra, because this is a focus of some of her writing. Mm-hmm. And we really get into that with Kendra, these habits and routines, and we talk about how they can nurture our spirituality. And we kind of discuss how, like, these really mundane acts or habits can actually be holy, which I love. I particularly loved it when she was talking about how taking a shot of tequila with her husband has become a routine or a ritual that she and her husband share. And it made me think about how, without even thinking about it, Zach and I make homemade pizza on Friday nights. You know this about us. Uh-huh. Have for years.
Delicious.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Our ritual is, it's so much like a dance, right? I prepare the dough. A couple hours later, Zach does the rest of the flourish, which, you know, I mean, he always gets credits for the pizza, and it's like, hello, I did the dough, but whatevs. But, you know, it is, it's like a dance. He's doing the rolling of the dough, and I'm doing the pizza sauce, and it's just a really beautiful ritual for our relationship.
Right, and it is a ritual, and it becomes this celebration, just like Kendra and her husband are, you know, quick to pull out the tequila when there's something to celebrate. Yeah. These are moments to be marked. And I do love that idea of them becoming habits or them becoming rituals for your entire family. We barely got into it during the interview, but another thing that struck me was all of the science that backs the need for kids to be part of a routine. So routine basically, in a nutshell, gives kids a sense of security. And I think if you give them some sort of solid structure to the day, they're more comfortable. And I mean, you can still be a really flexible kind of go with the flow parent and have built-in habits and routines. It looks different for everyone, but it's likely that you have certain expectations. So your child can expect, you know, a good night story or a tuck-in before bed, or, you know, you might be totally loosey-goosey all day long, but then you have this after-school snack and followed by homework, and the kids can expect that every single day. What I also love about these little rituals and little routines that eventually become habit, you know, they provide these moments of connection. So before the kids go to sleep, like maybe you say sweet dreams, or my mom always used to say nighty night, you know, and this becomes like this moment of connection, this little blessing kind of. And I think that just cultivating these moments of connection through our daily habits is really beautiful. So I guess another takeaway from the interview was that we all have these special rituals, whether we've ever called them that or not.
Yeah, I totally agree. And your kids thrive with these kind of rituals and habits. I mean, I know we can't be the only ones. When my kids wake up, they're like, what are we doing today when we get home from school? They want to know these, right? And when we're gone, my daughter FaceTimes us to pray at night. Like, these are things that they end up leaning on to kind of structure their days and then structure their years. And you and I have talked about it. It frees you up as a parent, because you're like, every day I know what I'm doing at 4 o'clock.
Yeah.
They're reading and doing their homework, you know, so you don't have to think about what you're going to do or plan something fun or any of that. Like, everybody knows this is the expectation.
Right. Well, I was even thinking when you were telling about doing pizza night every Friday night, like, you don't ever have to plan a menu for Friday night, because you know it's going to be pizza. So they really, like, in these very tangible ways, they free you up for other thoughts and ideas and power, brain power.
Another thing I love about this conversation is that Kendra is careful to remind listeners that if you're listening and thinking, oh my God, I don't have time for another activity or another step in my day or week, or oh my gosh, my kid is totally missing out because we don't have these rituals, rest assured, we're not asking you to create new rituals. Mm-hmm. We are just challenging you to identify what's already in your life. Like, we already have these. When she started talking, there were moments where you and I were both like, oh, wait, we do it. Wait, we do that. Wait, we do that. So I think, listener, you'll be really surprised and proud of yourself when you actually take those few moments to reflect on the way these play out in your life, too. I think we also have to save a little space in that same regard to change them. Like, if your rituals are no longer working for you, if you're still tucking in your 16-year-old and, you know, like, 99, give me, you know, maybe time. Maybe your 16-year-old doesn't love that, and the forcing it is actually making it worse. Maybe let it go, come up with a new one that your 16-year-old agrees with, right? Like, there's nothing wrong with letting the ones go that you've outgrown, too.
100% yes, I agree. And Tessie, I thought it was a really interesting conversation, and it got me thinking, if you will allow me to tell you what it got me thinking about, it just kind of that rhythm of life. So it's fall, it's finally fall, and like I recently replaced the petunias on the back porch with mums, and I do this every single year. We've had a few chilly nights, and Jake and I were just talking about how we need to get the heavy bedspread back out and, like, put it on the bed. Same bedspread, year after year, we do this. Mm-hmm. Soon, we'll spend an afternoon putting bikes away from, we'll put them, they have been in the garage all summer, we'll lock them up in the shed. I love that rhythm. I love the seasons and how they change, and really how all of creation, not just, you know, the earth, the animals, our families, ourselves, we do so well in patterns. Mm-hmm. And I think there's just something so fulfilling and comforting about this flow of life. I feel like it's almost primal. And I really just love how this conversation with Kendra just, it's brought these things up. It's made me notice. And she really does. She asks us to be aware of our routines and our own rituals and our habits, both the big ones and the small ones.
I agree. I love that. You're right. I love that. I can't wait, listeners, to see how this just kind of feels in your soul, to reflect and to hear. We would love, of course, to hear what kind of rituals you do. Stick around for the dare. It's a special dare today. Kendra actually recites one of her poems that fits so perfectly on this podcast. But for now, let's get into it.
Today we are here with Kendra Thompson. She is a blogger, a mom to two, a wife, a friend, and the minister of faith formation at Edwards Congregational United Church of Christ. A thoughtful woman, Kendra writes about the intersection of faith, life, and motherhood on her blog, and has recently been exploring the idea of ritual and the place of ritual in her family. We're anxious to talk to her about this idea, as well as many others, on today's episode of the Mama Bear Dares podcast. Kendra, welcome!
Thank you. It's fun to be here.
So, Kendra, as Leslie said, you're a pastor and you're a mother. How do you feel like these two intersect? Do pastors mother in a way that is unique to their calling to the church? Or what are the layers of serving the church and raising a family?
I think they do and they don't pastor in a unique way. I don't want to put us on some pedestal and say, oh, there are some things that only mothers can do. But I think for me, one of the things that I've embraced is, you know, it can feel sometimes like, how am I going to do this? How am I going to juggle doing the work of caring for a congregation and, you know, raising my children? And I think, you know, we take these vows, right? We take vows in our ordination or when we stand before a church and are called to be their minister. And we say similar vows when we bring a child to be dedicated or baptized. there's this long list mm-hmm. of things we say we're going to do, right? You know, I promise to serve you with my whole heart, you know, as a minister. I promise to raise my child in the church. We say that as a parent. My favorite one, you know, when you join a church or when you're baptized, you say, I plan to renounce the power of the devil. Oh, okay. You know, we say all of these things, some of them very manageable, some of them, you know, a little more exciting, like that last one. But we say them, we say yes with the help of God. Mm-hmm. And there's something about being a mother that has made that reality more real to me. You know, not that I didn't need help before being a pastor or, you know, being a wife and a friend, but something about being a mother has really made that more relevant. Like, there are all these things that are set before me to do, and I can do them, well, most of them, with the help of God. Mm-hmm. So I think that has influenced the way I view both of those callings, the calling of pastor and the calling of motherhood.
I love that you point that out. Just the other day, I was so frustrated with myself as a mother, with my kids for being kids. And I really just felt in that moment, it wasn't like I was rock bottom. Like, let's not be that dramatic. It was something silly, I'm sure.
I speak dramatic.
But I was just like, there's nothing left to do but pray. Like, God, yeah. I haven't asked you about this particular kid in a while. Mm-hmm. I haven't talked to you about this kid. Mm-hmm. But, like, I promise to parent this child and love this child and be committed to this child. But, like, really, I can only do it with
you. Hook me up, God. Yeah, help me out here.
Exactly, like, with your love and your grace and your teachings and your compassion. Yeah. But it's funny how, I mean, personally, like, I forget that so often, just like, you know, to rely on just asking, calling out for help. And as a Christian, you know, just taking the time to pray and ask for God's help. But yeah, that's so true. I think if we remember that, if that works for us, if we can remember that, yeah, I'm going to do this, but I'm going to need God's help.
Yeah.
Or I want God's help. I crave God's help, I
right.
guess.
Yeah, and I think being married, you can fool yourself into believing, like, oh, we can do this as two humans on our own, whatever. Yeah, but there's something about parenthood that you're like, Lord Jesus, I cannot do this. You know, when you just, because it has a way of making you feel the most ill-equipped person in the world at times. You know, it's just so humbling to make you realize, like, I'm going to need a little something else, a little power of the universe, mm-hmm. power of God here to help me get through this. So I totally agree with you that there is something about motherhood that just makes you feel and be reminded that you were never supposed to do this on your own.
Right. Well, so I went to seminary with the Presbyterians. This is one thread of my theological mutdom. And, you know, Presbyterians love to talk about total depravity. You know, like, there's nothing you can do to earn God's favor. God just gives it to you. And you accept it, God's grace, it's a gift. Now, as a seminary student, you know, I would hear that language and kind of think, yeah, sure. You know, okay, total depravity, right. But kind of with, like, a wink, wink, you know. What you just said, Tessie, made me think of this. But in motherhood?
Yeah.
Total depravity.
Yeah.
Yes, amen.
Yeah.
There is nothing. Help me out. Yeah. So some of those theological ideas that I studied as an inquisitive student, they make more sense to me now in motherhood. So I hope that affects how I pastor, because it, in a new way, I think I have grasped onto some of those things that I was taught, and I believe them more now than I did even then.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting how motherhood or mothering and pastoring have kind of made this connection and this intersection and this kind of new challenge and yet this old preparation kind of in your life. How would you say that becoming a mother, and we should mention you're a mother to two.
Yes.
And how old are your children?
You have 2.5 and 5 months.
So baby babies.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're still figuring this out, just right. like all
yeah,
of us
yeah,
are,
yeah. Yeah.
just like all of us. But how do you sense that becoming a mother has changed the way that you just, you view faith, or maybe even your view of who God is.
Well, I think this kind of dovetails in what we were just talking about really claiming those things that you believe, because they're intensified in motherhood. At least that's what I would say. But I also think, you know, even that though I was ragging on myself before we planned this podcast that I don't do enough ritual, I do think that I pray more as a parent. There's just like more that concerns me. You know, I think there are just things daily or in the middle of the night that just grab my attention. So I definitely think I'm a more prayerful person as a mother. It might be a little more myopic of a prayer life because it's very focused on concerns for my children. But I would say that practice has grown. But I also think, just as I recognize some of that dependence on God, that need, I think I feel like there's also more room for grace and forgiveness. We ask God to forgive us in our weakness or in our lack, and we also become gracious people as parents. As we watch our children grow, as they make mistakes and we forgive them over and over and over again. So I think those kind of things have definitely affected my faith.
Wendell Berry has a poem, and I'm not going to be able to think of what it's called, but we'll link it in the show notes. And it talks about this son and his relationship with the mother and how he just feels like he is just messed up again and again and again. But, you know, he comes, the speaker comes to this realization that, like, your forgiveness was so complete that you had forgiven me before I even screwed up.
Yes, yeah.
You know, and that is, it's so true. And becoming a mom, and it's so surprising, I think, and that sometimes I just don't even think we really recognize that we have that capability. Kendra, just to pivot a little bit here, you mentioned to me before this podcast a while back when we were having coffee that you had been thinking about this idea of habits becoming ritual, and specifically within the life of your family. So can you tell listeners what you mean by that?
Well, I actually participated in a kind of an alternative worship service at our church. We do these services during the summer just to mix things up. And one of them was called A Time to Reflect, where instead of gathering in our worship space in the pews, we met in our fellowship hall around round tables. And we had, you know, tea and coffee and goodies, and we talked about habits becoming ritual and the importance of ritual in our lives. It was actually a fine service. Great conversations came out of it. But something about this question just triggered me and made me feel guilty. And I think it's the double whammy of being a mother and a minister. And I thought, oh, man, I'm just not getting it right. I don't, you know, pray every night with my children before they go to bed. I, like I said to you, I didn't read them the Bible when they were in the womb, or, you know, pray before meals. There are all these kind of preconceived ideas of what ritual might look like. And I just had this sense of, like, I'm not doing those. So that's kind of what I was talking about. By that.
So is there such a thing as pastor guilt? Like, we hear mommy guilt all the time. I was unaware of pastor guilt.
Yeah, I mean, I think they might be similar. Okay. But yeah, I think for me, I won't claim this for other pastors, but I think you have this perception in your mind. You know, maybe it's as a mother, maybe it's as a pastor, maybe you're 40 years old. You say, this is not what it's supposed to look like. Mm. Motherhood isn't supposed to look like this. A pastor doesn't look like this. A 40-year-old doesn't look like this. So I think it's kind of, I think it's bogus, but I think it's having this image in your mind that you think you have to live up to, and nobody put it there. Mm-hmm. You know, it just sort of appeared one day, maybe from your own making and maybe from things that come in from the cultural, you know, cultural expectations.
Well, I gotta say, hearing you say that
you know, you forgot to pray, or that makes me feel a whole lot better about myself.
Yay!
Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, this is obviously uniquely Christian, you know, mm-hmm. this specific kind of guilt where it feels like I'll wake up and be like, when was the last time I prayed for, like Leslie was saying, this child, like, who's really struggling mm-hmm. or whatever. And then that kind of guilt is just uniquely Christian. You know, is this partly my fault because I haven't been putting out that energy and that kind of thing? But what I think is not unique to Christians and is universal as moms is just like, if we haven't been thinking specifically about what we can do to nurture this kid or to, you know, for you, like praying or just really focusing on the child in the womb or whatever. Like, where do you think this comes from, though, in specific terms with Christianity, either your pastor guilt or your mommy guilt, where do you think this comes from where when we don't pray or we feel like we don't pray hard enough or long enough or at the right times, like, where does this come from? Should we feel guilty about not holding that ritual?
Well, I have two thoughts. One is, I bet you and Leslie both have prayed for your children more than you've realized, right? Maybe mm-hmm. you haven't sat at the foot of your bed with kneeling with your hands in the right pose, saying, you know, our Father who art in heaven. But I bet you have been mindful of your child. I bet you have stewed about them, you know, in the morning while you sipped your coffee. Yeah. I bet while you're on a treadmill or driving, you have been mindful of your child. And I would say that is prayer.
Hallelujah.
I love that so much.
So that's one thing. The other thing is that I think part of where this comes from is that we have conflated spiritual practice or ritual with middle class family domesticated living. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes I think it's hard to separate what you do as a person, a spiritual person, and how you think that's supposed to look in some sort of Norman Rockwell painting. Mm-hmm. Right? And I think maybe the beginning of letting go of some of that guilt is separating those things. Okay, you know, you don't need to look like that. I'll just use it again. The Norman Rockwell painting of the perfect Christian household that might, you know, come up in your head. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't need to look like that to be a prayerful person. Mm-hmm.
How did you learn that?
I think I'm still learning it. I think part of that just came to me as I was reflecting on these mm-hmm. questions. I think, and one of the ways that I try to live this out or embrace it is by, I'd like to say that one of my spiritual gifts is being self-deprecating. So I have no problem, you know, just
same.
Getting on Twitter or Facebook and saying, you know, yep, I messed this up today. Mm-hmm.
I did this. Long before we actually met in person, I've been following you on Twitter and Facebook. So thank you for that, sharing your spiritual gift with the world.
But what I've realized is when I'm able to do that, to be transparent, to be honest about, you know, here's where I screwed up or here's where I'm just not getting it right. People really respond mm-hmm. to that, you know, and sometimes it's not just moms, you know, obviously there are a lot of things I talk about that, connects with other moms, but I think a lot of people have this sense, you know, of just not getting it right and not knowing what to do with that feeling or that expression.
Well, and I really think that point that you made about your Christianity or your spirituality being, you know, what's the right word? Like the relationship between that and middle-class America mm-hmm. or what we think that is. Mm-hmm. I just think that's fascinating because I think back of like, how did the culture that surrounded me of my middle-class white upbringing, how does that inform my faith? Because there's some good things about that,
sure,
but then there's also some really wrong and kind of detrimental things about that. And I also wonder then, like, having come from that culture in a very real household, you know, where I saw my mom she told me she made mistakes, you know, I mean, mm-hmm. without it being so shiny and clean and, you know, praying at 3 times a day and mm-hmm. using the right words and things like that. That wasn't really what happened in
right.
at least my middle-class American household. So why have we kind of wrapped those things together?
Mm-hmm.
And when do we start sort of untangling that mess?
That's a good question. You know, I don't know if this fits in, but something you were talking about made me think of Karen Armstrong. She's a religious author. She writes a lot about world religions, but her definition of myth is something that happened once and that happens all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that definition because I think sometimes we get, in Christian circles, we can get kind of, we don't like the word myth because it sounds like maybe we're saying, these accounts in the biblical text didn't happen or aren't true. And I don't think that's what historians and religious scholars think when they say myth. So I really like the idea of myth being something that happened once and something that happens all the time. And maybe in that happening all the time, the mythologizing is that it's like a game of telephone. Mm-hmm. So you remember part of your mother mm-hmm. growing up, mm-hmm. you know, and maybe over time, somehow the imperfections just kind of like fall out of the colander. And what you remember is this like, oh, I don't even know if this is what you'd say uh-huh. about your mother. She did it so well. She did everything right. She could get us out of the house by 8 a.m. And we were, you know, in curled pigtails and tights and dresses and we were well fed and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And probably a lot of that's true, but I think maybe the times when we're hardest on ourselves as mothers or whatever is maybe when we're mythologizing mm-hmm. that memory.
Yeah. Yeah, Tessie, that reminds me of what you were talking about with youth sports.
Yeah.
And how, you know, all of these things that seem so huge to us now as moms and parents, like you have very few memories other than the sing-song yeah. chants of softball.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we do. We have, as humans, maybe even just that sort of desire or that pull towards myth, I guess.
Yeah, and it's funny because I've actually said to my husband, Zach, before that, like, if anything happens to me, please don't tell my kids that I was, like, this woman who did it all and she did it with a smile. Yeah. Be like, your mom was a hot mess 38% of the day, and then about 20% of the day she was just a mess. And then, you know, like, be real. I don't want them to have an impossible standard to either live up to for Dayla or marry into for the boys or whatever, you know? Because mm-hmm. I think you're right. I think both for our parents or aunties and uncles or friends or social media, we latch on to a snapshot of the day, right? I mean, sometimes literally in a picture or in a story, you know, and we're like,
well, that's what you put on Instagram.
Yes,
right?
Yeah, yeah,
the good one.
Exactly. And so you latch onto this and you're like, oh, that represents 100% of the time, when actually maybe it represents 32% of the time, you
yeah.
know? And so I think we forget that. I think what we blow that out and we create this huge myth that this is what other people are doing, when maybe that's just what they did for the 30 seconds it took to put on their social media channel, you know?
It just seems so much heavier, at least to me, when we talk about these things in terms of our spirituality. Then.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, like for me, if I see an amazing dinner prep happening or something, I'm much more able, because I've been practicing longer, of just being like, I celebrate that dinner. I don't compare it to my dinner. I just celebrate that dinner.
Nice. Yeah.
You know, I've been practicing that for a long time. But then when you, taking it back to sort of those expectations of what rituals you're doing at home to instill to shape your child's soul, like that's when I, like, it just takes it to a totally different level.
Oh yeah. I mean, I think that's the difference in what I found in parenting older kids and younger kids. And Leslie, you and I were just talking about this the other day. Kendra, you have young kids, so it feels like I just actually have to get them to live until tomorrow. You know, that's all, that's my goal here. Like, no light sockets, right. None of that. And then as they get older, the idea that we are shaping their souls is the heaviest weight, because probably they're going to physically live to the next day, but like, how do we get them there emotionally and spiritually? So I agree with you, Leslie, and that, and I think that is why it does feel heavier. But we also have to, especially if you follow other pastors or spiritual leaders on, you know, their websites or anything like that, it can feel convicting in a not great way when it feels like they're always sitting down with their families and having like really great prayers, and their kids are like, hey, mommy, I wanted to read you this Bible passage. And you're like, shh, I don't think my kids know any Bible passages, you know? So,
but yeah. I'm watching Game of Thrones.
Yeah, exactly. Honey, get out of here. The Red Wedding is coming. Yeah.
Actually, that's why I kind of tell on myself, you know, is that I think we do that sometimes too much as a profession. We put the best things forward, and probably some of us have been trained that way. Right. Like, you know, I was told in one job when I was working in ministry, when you walk out the door, you're on the clock. That's what my supervisor told me. And in some way, that's probably a good thing to keep in mind, so you're not just like walking around town acting like an idiot. But it put a lot of pressure on me. I thought, okay, as soon as I walk, well, then I'll just never leave the house, maybe. Well, that, no, that's not an option. But I think we need to give ourselves some slack. I think, you know, my method is sometimes we need to be public and open about where we get things wrong, where we fail. But I also think if we're looking to leaders and all we see is this like seamless person who gets it right all the time, we're never going to live up to that. And that, you know, I mean, to be theological, that wasn't Jesus. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, he was, you know, we have this conception of Jesus as perfect, as being without sin, but he was messing things up all the time. He was getting in trouble all the time. And so I think sometimes we need to see more examples of his people that look like that. Mm-hmm. You know, not the polished, you know, he was usually on to those people,
right?
Like, mm-hmm. Okay, I'm gonna poke some holes in your polished look, mm-hmm. in your perfection.
So getting back just to the idea of ritual a little bit, before you had children, so this is obvious, mm-hmm. you're thinking about this as from the standpoint of a mom and like ritual for the family, but before you had children, before you became a mother, did you have other rituals in your life? Did you have rituals maybe that were just for you, or maybe rituals in your marriage? Like, talk to us about just the place of rituals for you, Kendra, before becoming a mom and having a family.
I have a hard time sitting still. So when I think about ways that I've practiced my faith, they're usually in motion. So a lot of times I would go jogging. Somehow this seems impossible with two children. I know people do it, but I don't do it anymore.
I mean, you're 5 months postpartum. Like,
right. But I would find myself jogging, and I think, you know, you get moving, and then thoughts just come into your mind, and I would pray. And I would kind of do these, like, sweeping gestures where I just, like, I don't know, like, almost like I was swimming or batting things away. So maybe you would have seen me at Vanderveer Park doing this, but I think it was a way of, like, clearing some of the stuff that was like, okay, you know, this thought can get out of here, this idea. And I would also just, like, kind of be lifting people in prayer while I was jogging.
So a physical movement.
Yeah.
Okay. To correspond with these thoughts.
I also like to write. I obviously had more time for that before children, but that's still a ritual that I practice. I've been a part of a couple of interesting, I don't know, spiritual groups that became ritual. When I lived in Colorado, I met with this group of other clergy. One woman was a Jungian psychologist. There was another woman who was an artist. And we would get together every Monday for lunch, and we would do these, like, we call them soul collages. So we would put together these images with different, like, magazine pictures. You know, like the kind of thing you do in ninth grade or something.
I love this.
But we would do this, and then we would talk about it, like, what's going on here, and what does it have to do with our day? And we had a Jungian psychologist there who would kind of, you know,
wow.
She wasn't overbearing, but sometimes she'd bring to light, you know, some of that stuff. And it was this great place to process that.
So that's sort of a communal ritual then? Like, did you each do your own collage?
Yeah. Okay. I actually have a deck of cards that these are, I'll show them to you sometime.
I love that. I love it.
Another thing that I participated in that I would love to duplicate at some time, is there was a campus ministry group at the University of Kansas that did something called Silent Saturdays. So they would open up their campus ministry space, and it was all day, you know, or however long you could stay, and everything you did was in silence. So mm-hmm. some people brought homework, some people brought, you know, writing they needed to do, some people napped. There was one woman who always brought, like, a bag of, like, all her bills and stuff she just had been piling up she didn't take care of. So everything from ordinary to extraordinary. And then there were little breaks to break the silence. There was one where it was just checking in. And then at the end, there was a ritualized meal with, like, candlelight and different courses and conversation around the room. And I've always thought, oh, it would be amazing to do that again because it was so powerful for me.
And when you say ritualized meal, does that just mean that it was always the same week after week, or were there certain parts that made up
this? I think it was imbued with meaning. So every, you know, every piece of food had a significance to it.
Okay.
There was a ritual around it, so there was, like, going around and sharing different things happening in people's lives or what came to them during the silence. There was a certain time when the candles were lit. Mm. There were certain times when you, like, raised your glass of wine and drank from it, that kind of thing.
I love that. I think as a culture we've gotten away from that, but we've adopted from Ethiopia, as has Leslie, and we visited there this past November. And the man who took us to see our special people there was like, just so you know, there are a lot of rituals in Ethiopia, and my husband are like, please tell us everything so we don't mess up, you know, we don't want to embarrass our kids in this way. And so it was very much like, this is how the food is served, this is what time it'll be served, this is who eats first, then they will say you know, a word of thanks, and there were all these rituals, and I found myself near tears the whole time because there's something sacred, there's something powerful.
Yes.
There's something, you know, I just kept saying to Zach, like, I want to take off my shoes, we are on some holy ground
right.
here, because there yeah. we were holding space together. We didn't speak the same language, you know, and our translator wasn't directly translating. He'd wait for the person to pause in their speech or something and then just kind of you know, summarize what was being said. And yet it felt so powerful and so sacred. So I left thinking, there is, it's holy, right, to have these kind of rituals. But it's hard in our culture because I don't think it's as celebrated as it is in other cultures.
Yeah.
I think that's actually, that made me think of a question, Tessie. Like, by definition, are rituals always holy?
Hmm.
Like, regardless of if you're praying or doing a what we would maybe call, you know, like a religious ritual. Like, I don't know. There's something
That's
about
a good question.
Ritual.
Well, I, you know, the question that we started with is habits becoming ritual.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, ritual is kind of the religious word for habit,
mm-hmm.
maybe. But I don't know that it necessarily has to be holy, but it does seem like there's something about ritualizing something that slows it down a little, gives
yeah.
it meaning, gives it importance, because somewhere in there you say, oh, I did this and I want to do it again.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. I'm just thinking of, we've started, my husband and I, to try really hard to be better about. We've started to try really hard to be better about.
I like
about.
It. Good effort. A for effort, Klipsches. Congratulations.
You're speaking my language.
Well, for 2 weeks now, we've had date night on Thursday night.
Mm-hmm.
We bring home ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I love this habit. Like, it's becoming, or maybe it's more of a tradition. Mm-hmm. Like, we're trying to make it a tradition so that Jake and I get to check in. And then we come home with some vegan, thank you, Ben and Jerry's, some whole fat, whole milk ice cream. And we have been sitting on the porch with the kids.
Nice.
And I feel like this is a ritual I can get behind. Or like this is a spiritual, this can be spiritual for our family. Just that checking in. I don't know.
Okay, so I have a similar one.
Okay, good.
I was recently reminded that Sundays you can go fill your growler at Great River Brewery for half price.
Oh.
Shout out Great River Brewery. Yeah.
and by Sunday afternoon, I'm a pastor, you know.
Yes.
So in some ways, Sunday is this weird beginning of the week, end of the week. Mm-hmm. It feels like both. Mm-hmm. And I never want to cook. I mean, I have a love-hate relationship with cooking anyway, but on Sundays, I'm just out. So, I don't know, maybe a month ago, I think I may have even called my husband John on the way home from church and was like, I'm going to go fill the growler. Maybe you could order China Taste. Shout out to China Taste. Let's do this. And it felt so beautiful that we did it again.
Mm-hmm.
And we've done it a couple times just as a family, but now we've started like inviting friends. Like, how does Chinese noodles and Great River beer sound? And you know what? People are really interested in that.
Oh,
church.
Yeah.
That always sounds good.
Yeah.
So I do think that ritual can sometimes be as simple or as ordinary as bringing ice cream home after a date or picking up a budget-friendly growler of beer and getting some Chinese takeout.
So we have listeners who are not religious, not spiritual. Why do you think it's important for everybody to have a ritual?
I think it's important to have things that matter to you, things that have meaning, you know. And again, as a mother, I think there are certain things that kids look forward to or expect. And we're not a super structured household, but even at our house, you know, my 2.5-year-old will say, you know, is it time to eat dinner or should we brush my teeth? Is it time to take a nap? You know, whether he wants to do any of those things or not, he's anticipating them. And I think it helps, I don't know, the depth of our character to have some meaningful rituals in our life that kind of deepen that part of ourselves.
Mm-hmm. You know, Kendra, I could not agree more, and I'm sorry for putting you on the spot there, but I think it's important to honor that too, that the reality that is, you know, you don't have to believe in the same God that we do, or you don't have to have a really heavy spiritual undertone to understand that like ritual can shape your day and can shape your life in really beautiful ways too.
Yeah, I think so.
Let's get back to rituals for marriage.
Okay.
So what are some things that you found that you either started intentionally or maybe just sort of fell into, like the Chinese food and growlers? Basically, I just want some more. Let's talk more about food. Like ice cream and Chinese food and beer.
Well, I started to write some things down, but they all sound like advice. So I wrote down, you know, keep talking to one another. Keep trying new things together, keep a sense of humor. And I thought, blah, that doesn't sound like ritual. That's all advice. So I thought, what are the things that we do together as a couple? Mm-hmm. Some of them we do as a family too. The first one we don't do as a family, just as a couple. And that is, I wrote down tequila. So there's some backstory. Not like you down the whole bottle, but you know, shooters with a little lime and salt. My husband John and I met at a Cinco de Mayo party, and so we met over a shot of tequila. And so it's become a part of our story and a ritual for us. And we find, you know, you can celebrate anything. And
yes.
We find things to toast to, and we do. Now, I'm still nursing, so I do halvesies. But, you know, again, it's not the amount. It's the, like, we are toasting to us.
Yeah.
We're toasting to our story. Mm-hmm. This is part of our ritual.
Oh, I love that. You know, even if it's just, like, you're toasting with your water glass. Like, of course, it's more fun if it's, like, a glass of champagne or tequila. But just like taking a second and just, here's to us.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And maybe, you know, for listeners, maybe you have a beverage or, you know, some sort of food item that was yours, mm-hmm. you know, that you met over, you know, for us, like I said, it was tequila. So that's kind of become our ritual. But
love it.
I think, you know, raise your cup of coffee, raise your Diet Coke, whatever it is, and toast to each other. Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about rituals and about what we're doing. And there might be some listeners out there who are feeling kind of like you did, right? Like years ago when you were sitting at this kind of alternative service, they're just not feeling ritual-y enough.
Sure, yeah.
So how might you advise these listeners to embrace ritual and... or not? Well, I mean, what would you say to someone who is sitting there thinking like, oh gosh, I don't have rituals?
Well, I think first of all, I'd say you probably do. There's probably something you do frequently because it matters to you. And I would say give yourself some credit. Maybe that is prayer. Maybe that is spiritual practice. Or if neither of those words are part of your vocabulary, maybe they're just meaningful things that you do or you hold sacred. Maybe you don't want sacred, but you know, like that it's important to you. Mm-hmm. Because chances are there are things that are a part of our lives, a part of the rhythm of our lives that have meaning and have weight to them. The other thing is that if you are a mom or a pastor or someone who has this particular, you know, mommy guilt, I think a ritual could be taking a moment to really be aware of those preconceived notions, those expectations you have in front of yourself. Like, take a minute and really look at them, examine them, and then just, like, sweep them out of the way. Like, just let go of them. I think that could become a ritual. That's what I'm trying to embrace, is recognizing when there seems like this ideal or this expectation that I just can't meet, and then letting go of it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I don't think we need to put just another thing that we have to manage on our plates as women, right? Because we've got a lot. But, you know, as you were talking about your rituals that you have in marriage, I was thinking to myself, well, we have a lot more than I'd actually think. And if listeners really pay attention, I think they'll realize that they have rituals too. They just might not call them rituals, or they might not, you know, whatever it might be, but we actually have a lot going on. So don't put so much pressure to add more onto your plate. Maybe just recognize what you already have going on. And if you feel like there's something missing, then you start a new one.
Right.
Well, and on the flip side of that, I can see also needing rituals and approaching different problems or different issues with a new ritual, meaning like, you know, there's discipline in sitting down and meditating or praying, or there's discipline to be had in like anything. And so, you know, if there's an area of life where, you know, perfect example, Jake and I were really struggling in our marriage, and we needed a new habit. We needed a new ritual, you know? And so, and we weren't calling it that necessarily, but we're like, we need a date night. Like, this is really important. And so making time for that habit to form and allowing it to stick, I think sometimes, you know, again, you don't want to put something on your plate just to say you've done it, but there are times when I think we do need a little bit of habit or ritual in order to make our lives better.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm going to get a little Jesus-y again. So the story where Jesus talks about the greatest commandment being to, you know, love God and love your neighbor as yourself. If you're going to love your neighbor as yourself, that has to start with loving yourself. Mm-hmm. And I would extend that to, you know, caring for things in your life, like your marriage. Sometimes carving out that space for yourself or for your marriage might feel like, oh, I'm just being selfish. There's so much work here to do and I need to get stuff done. But if we don't carve out that space, then we're not going to do the other things we need to do in our life. We're not going to do them well. We're going to burn out. We're going to be cranky. You know, I really think being the best we can be starts with tending to the self. So I think it totally validates the space we carve out to create that ritual.
I think that actually leads perfectly into the question about really self-care for ourselves. We talk about the mother self and the other self on this podcast. And really, I love what you just said about having to really nurture that other self in really important ways. So you have a newborn and a toddler and a very busy life, you know, but I know you believe in this sort of self-care. So what are some things that you're able to do during this season of life? You might be nailing it. You might not be. It's okay.
Right.
But what are your intentions right now?
So I have a good friend who's a pastor in Maquoketa, and she and I both take Mondays off. So we've kind of deemed Monday clergy Sabbath. And so not every Monday, but often we get together and sometimes we'll go shopping or we'll make something, make a meal together, you know, something that we wouldn't have the time to do during the week when things are busy. A lot of times we just hang out and talk, which is really good, but kind of observing that clergy Sabbath loosely. I am trying to start writing regularly, and so Tuesday is my writing day. This is kind of scary, so I've been filling it with other things, and I need to focus on what I meant for that day to be.
You can't hide from yourself. You can. But you can try, but you can't hide.
But I will say, even the times that I've feebly done this, you know, to drop my kids off at childcare and then go sit somewhere and just write is amazing. That feeds me a lot. My friend Eleanor and I get together on Thursday mornings and we walk in the neighborhood and pray. We also take silly pictures next to next to landmarks in our neighborhood, like the little free libraries or statues of Mary or, you know, things like that.
So what does it look like for two women to walk around a neighborhood and pray together? I'm just curious. Like, do you talk through your prayers?
Yeah. So most of it is walking and talking, taking these silly pictures. Like, I really hope that, well, I believe that there is a playful part of the Spirit of God. So I think even just doing those things delights God. But so that's part of it, catching up with one another, taking these silly pictures. And then there's usually some thread of conversation that leads us to what we pray about.
Okay.
I think the whole time we are praying, but then we actually sit on my front step or, you know, sit down somewhere and pray. And we've come back to each other and said, you know, that thing that we lifted in prayer, it's already in motion. It's already, you know, something's already happening.
What a beautiful
thing.
That's awesome.
So those are some of the things that I do. And like I said, definitely writing.
Thanks for opening up sort of that idea of prayer for our listeners. Sure. I always love the prayerful spirit and that you really, I do believe that you can be praying and connecting with a higher power in so many different ways and so many different ways. But I love how you've sort of helped stretch that definition a little bit. It reminded me of that.
Sure. Thank you.
So just generally, Kendra, thank you so much.
Sure. This has been really fun.
Yeah, thanks for the whole conversation. But we have a special treat today because Kendra is going to take us out here with our Mama Bear Dare, but it's in the form of a poem that she has written. It's called Lead with Love.
Lead with Love. Through the eyes of self-criticism, I see dishes and dog hair, laundry piles and toddler toys, Chinese takeout menus, and weeds in the backyard that are as tall as I am. Every piece of this information says fail. But the eyes of love see something altogether different. A household fed, priorities recalibrated, time spent creatively nourishing a people and not a preoccupied scrubbing of this linoleum receptacle. The eyes of understanding are poised for the show, front row seats to the circus of managing two selves, two calls. Dinners, budgets, babies, bedtimes, meetings, committees, curriculum, coffees. The eyes of understanding don't judge the scrambled egg remains in the pan. Should I? The eyes of critique can't help but correct, yet they can still be softened, persuaded, to glance a new view, beyond what looks like failure. What else is there? What is it? It is real life. To embrace this is to discard self-judgment, to renounce perfectionism. It is to lead with love. Lead with love.
So listeners, thanks for hanging with us today. Don't forget that today is actually your last chance to win a bundle of Mama Bear's manifesto. Tessie and I are getting ready for a party tomorrow night. We're going to have... We're going to launch this thing into the world. So,
and Wednesday, Leslie, Wednesday, our listeners need to come back because that's when we'll announce the winner.
That's right. We'll announce the winner on Wednesday. So you still have today and I guess tomorrow, right? To leave a comment.
Yeah, tell them how they have to do it.
Yes. Just give us a little bit of love through the interwebs and you will be entered for a chance to win a bundle of books so that you can read that book with your friends. So follow along, listeners, on our social media. We're on Facebook, we're on Instagram, we're on Twitter. We'll be posting pictures from the launch party, so that'll be fun. It'll be like you're there with us celebrating. We're excited about that. We're also on Snapchat, and we have a website, which is where we put all of our show notes. So if you heard something that you want to know a little bit more about, you can check out articles, links there on the show notes. So you can find us there and tell us your ritual. Come back on Wednesday. Hit us up on social media. We love to hear from our community of Mama Bears. Thanks again for listening.
Clips out. Bye. Okay, bye. Hey, girl, hey. Hey, girl, hey. I don't know how to finish that.